Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
All right, today, at least one tiny town per podcast. And we're going to do that today. We're not going to do it right now, but soon, in the next few minutes. But let me throw out some statistics that I just double-checked or triple-checked over the weekend. In the United States of America, you have, give or take, 108,000 towns within the 50 states. 108,000 towns. Of them, 19,495 are incorporated or municipal towns. And a municipal town is typically a community in which through your tax dollars, they have municipal services like a police force, a fire department, a public school system, or a public library. Those are municipal services offered, okay? And once again, there are 19,495 of those in the United States, of which 14,768 of those towns, out of the incorporated towns, that is, have a population of 5,000 people or less. All right. Out of the 108,000 towns in the United States, only 10 towns have a population of 1 million people or more. Just 10. And that's, you know, that's a fraction of a fraction of 1% of, 108,000. There are 310 towns in the United States that have a population of 100,000 people or more. Just 310 out of the 108,000 total. All right. And there are 88,505 towns in the United States that are unincorporated. All right. So that lays a little groundwork. We'll be back in a few minutes with more on our featured tiny town of the
day. Say some shit to y'all that I seen yesterday that made me smile, but it hurt me to my heart. There's a house next door to me that's been abandoned, and the yard, the grass, high as hell and everything. There's a couple of abandoned cars out there beside the house. Well, yesterday I get off work about 7 o'clock. A Mexican guy pulled up. He said, "These your cars?" I said, "No." He said, "I just bought this house, man." I said, "All right, that's what's up." He was like, "You know whose cars it is?" He said, "No." He said, "Well, I bought the house, not the cars." Okay, I'm like, cool. I'm thinking he's just coming to look at the house. I go back in the house, do a little straighten up. I swear to God, I walk back at the house. Now, I'm getting off about 7:20. It's fucking 9 Mexican trucks just pulled up. They got fucking beer, lights, and shit, right? So I'm like, what y'all finna do? He said, "We finna fix this house." I said, "What kind of crew you got working after 7 o'clock? He said, "These my friends." The fucking house is fixed this morning. They went in there and drywalled that fucking house. Wow. I just left out of there. It was a fucking abandoned house. That bitch looked new this morning. Whew. It was an abandoned fucking house, and it looked new this morning. It's an old African proverb: many hands make light work. I just don't think they're better than us. I just think we won't do nothing together. Wow. You're not hearing what the fuck I'm saying. It was an abandoned house yesterday at 7:15. That bitch is new this morning. He bought a tax lien house. I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait to see, is one family going to live in there? Is they going to... I'm going to get to know the motherfuckers. You best believe me, when I make some money, I'm going to do it. I'm going to bring us together. And I'm not fucking with a lot of people.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, "Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on?" He said, "Don't worry about it. Just go ahead." So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, "Whoa." He said, "Hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know?" He said, "Man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here." He said, "Nah, I want to know what's in the door." He said, "You sure you want to see what's in the door?" He said, "Yeah." So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm a...
Instruction here. Now I've got, I'm trying, or anybody, 619-768-2945. If a person wanted to call in to, you know, our live stream podcast right now, how would they do that? Okay. Now the regular guest call-in number is 619-768-2945. But there's also a way in which people can call in from online, and I do not know that information. So if Robin, Warren, or anybody, if you know that information, please let me know, like, ASAP. Robin, if you're there, just press 1. Chris, we're working on that right now. Okay. If anybody knows, please give us that information. And anyway, while we're waiting on that, find that out. Like I said, we feature one tiny town a day per podcast, that is. So, okay. Well, let's do this musical interlude while we're sorting things out. Okay, all right. We're going to talk about Tiny Town number 18, Loria Washington. We'll be back momentarily.
Yo, homie, I'm not supposed to say anything, but you have nothing to worry about. You're in.
Your word?
Me and Carlton got in? Well, not exactly. I mean, you're cool and all, but Carlton, well, he's not exactly our type.
What do you mean, not our type?
Well, Carlton is not like you and me. You know what I'm saying?
No, I don't know what you're saying.
Well, Carlton doesn't exactly exemplify what I think a Phi Beta Gamma is.
Oh, and what is that?
Well, it's not Ralph Lauren shirts and wingtip shoes in corporate America. We don't need a brother like him in this fraternity.
But man, he is exactly what you need in this fraternity.
Carlton has been a straight-A student since preschool. He gives you 150% every time.
Look, Will, I realize he's your cousin and you have to defend him, but this discussion is closed.
All right.
Let's go. I didn't get in.
What? Why?
Look, I don't know, man. Come on. Just let's go.
How dare you not take Will? He's full of potential.
That's why we want him. It's you we don't want.
Me? But I did everything. I cooked, I cleaned, I hand washed the toilets.
Everything your butler does for you. I'm not accepting no prep school Bel Air bread sellout into my fraternity.
Homie, you can stop all that.
No, wait, Will. I got this one.
You think I'm a sellout. Why? Because I live in a big house or I dress a certain way? Or maybe it's because I like Barry Manilow.
You mean Barry White, y'all.
Being black isn't what I'm trying to be. It's what I am. I'm running the same race and jumping the same hurdles you are, so why are you tripping me up? You said we need to stick together, but you don't even know what that means. If you ask me, you're the real sellout.
Yeah, that's right, boy. And in the words of my illustrious cousin, we will make like a tree and leave.
Look, you don't speak.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out. He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. and sank a three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry, because shortly after, he got the ball again, this time on the near side, for another three-pointer at the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
The only two things in life that make it worth living is guitars tuned good and firm feeling women. I don't need my name in the marquee lights. I got my song and I got you with me tonight. Maybe it's time we got back to the basics of love. Let's go to Lukenbach, Texas, Waylon and Willie and the boys. This successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and McCoys. Between Hank Williams' pain songs, Lou Berry's train songs, and Blue Eyes crying in the rain. Out in Lukenbach, Texas, ain't nobody feeling no pain. So baby, let's sell your diamond ring, buy some boots and faded jeans and go away. This coat and tie is choking me, and in your high society you cry all day. We've been so busy keeping up with the Joneses, four-car garage, and we're still building on. Maybe in time we got back to the basics of love. Let's go to Lukenbach, Texas, Waylon and Willie and the boys. The successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and McCoys. Between Hank Williams' pain songs, Newberry's train songs, and Blue Eyes crying in the rain. Out in Lukenbach, Texas, ain't nobody feeling no pain. Let's go to Lukenbach, Texas, William Waylon and boy. This successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and the Coys. Between the Hank Williams pain song, Jerry Jeff train songs, and Blue Eyes crying in the rain. Out in Lukenbach, Texas, there ain't nobody feeling no pain.
All right, here we go. Today, what's the headline we have? From ex-convict to town founder, and we're featuring today Tiny Town number 18, Laurier, Washington. That's in the Pacific Northwest, and Laurier is spelled L-A-U-R-I-E-R. That's L-A-U-R-I-E-R, Laurier, Washington. And let's read up on it. Well, let's give you some facts on it. Laurier, Washington, population, one person. All right, that's a regular permanent resident, one person. And they're on 40 acres of land. Lori is 40 acres big. This town was founded by an ex-convict. And the only name I have on that particular person is their name was Russell. I don't know if that was a last name or first name, but like Cher. Okay. Russell. And, of course, they named it after somebody different. But Russell, an ex-convict, was the founder of the town. Originally, it was mining town. It was a mining town, and now they have this one person town. Now that's a regular resident, okay, permanent resident. But they do have people that work in Laurier, Washington. They have an airport. They have an airport. The AV Airport, A-V-E, or AVY Airport, A-V-E-Y. They have a post office, and they have two residences for border control. Because, like I say, this is in Washington State. I believe it's in Ferry County. So there's not a whole lot of information that I found on it, but let me read to you what we do have. And this, you know what, this is an example of, another example of why the United States has so many opportunities. You just got to know where to look. All right, Laurier, let's look at it. Laurier, Washington is a census-designated place in Ferry County, Washington. All right, and Washington State, that is. It neighbors Canada and the United States border. It's on the United States border. The nearest school district is Orient School District. According to the 2010 census, Laurier had one permanent resident. All right, now there are people that work in Laurier because they do have an airport there, I think a general store and something like that. All right, now name origin. Russell was the initial name of what we now call Laurier, Washington. Russell's Washington was the initial name of the namesake, but it's uncertain. When seeking to establish a post office, Russell was discovered to have been an ex-convict. So if somebody can do time in prison, get out, and start their own town, what a country. That's why I play the Jimi Hendrix Star Spangled Banner in the mornings now. All right, prompting a search for a new name, the Great Northern Railroad, which arrived in 1902, chose Boawell, from a combination of two settlers, Boeth and Kitwell, respectively. Kitwell preferred Laurier, and that name was prevailed as and so did the post office that opened that same year. Lord Wilfrid Laurier, who was the Prime Minister of Canada from 1896 to 1911, so they looked at, all right, here's the Prime Minister of Canada, although we're in the United States, but we figure the town's name will be more respectable than the guy who actually founded the town, who all we have right now is Russell. All right, we're going to do some more digging to find out the full name. But Russell, an ex-convict, a guy that needed a place to start over with, the state of Washington gave him a chance within the county of Ferry, Washington, and Washington State. So hats off to Russell and the town that you started, which is it's over 100 years old. Over 100 years old. It has its own airport. Has its own post office, and I believe it has a general store there, too. And a lot of people enter and exit the United States through Laurier, Washington. And that's our tiny town feature for today. And tomorrow we'll be on number, let's see, this was what, 18, what 19 tomorrow? So, and as we get more information on Laurier, we will find that out for you. Okay, now, let's see. Let's go to, I believe the phone line is open. Robin, are you there? And she was there. Okay, let me make sure I opened her mic. I thought I opened her mic.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you clear.
Hello?
Okay, so that's an interesting town in your state. The ex-convict started his own town. It's over 100 years old.
Yeah.
What's that?
How did you find him?
My hobby and now de facto profession is I guess it started with the black townships, and then I noticed a pattern, like, you know, ex-slaves putting together towns, and then, like, Houston, Texas started with just two brothers that bought 2,000-plus acres of land, and when they passed away, Houston probably didn't even have 2,000 people, so they went from two to less than 2,000 before they passed away. But now Houston's got like probably 2 million people in the metro area, 1 million people that live within the city of Houston proper. So mm-hmm. I discovered, mm-hmm. The United States has over 108,000 towns ranging in population from 1 to over 8 or 9 million. So there's some pretty uh-huh. interesting stories, but the tiny towns, it seems like, you know, such humble beginnings. I mean, today, and I just went by, you know, lowest populated cities per state. That's how I started accumulating lists. So that's how I ran across, Laurier, Washington. And uh-huh. there are other cities that will feature in Washington State, but like I say, ex-convict, ex-slaves, people that were slaves that started businesses. A husband and wife couple in South Dakota, they noticed that people at the lake were probably hungry because there was no food stands around, so they started cooking burgers. And they built a town out of flipping burgers. You know, people that got turned away from hotels and started their own town,
yeah.
or families that started their own town. One guy in Oklahoma, we haven't featured him yet. One guy in Oklahoma, he bought a town that was almost a ghost town. And what he did was he bought the town, and he uses the town for he and his family and friends as a weekend getaway. So there's some amazing American stories that
how did you discover this man in Washington State?
Well, once again, I went by population. I saw a town that had a population of just 5 people, and I went on Wikipedia. I went on Wikipedia, and I read about Laurier, and then it said, because I read everything from Wikipedia. That's how I discovered, but I first discovered it because I saw this town in Washington State in Ferry County that had a population of just one person. That's how, it's as simple as that.
Okay.
Now it has the airport now. It has and it started out, it has an airport now, it has a post office now, it has a border crossing now, but when Russell found it, it was just a remote 40 acres, and he figured, all right, maybe we can find some gold here, so So he developed it into a mining town. So people were coming
in
to
Seattle,
basically mine.
Is it near Seattle or is it in Eastern Washington?
No, it's in Ferry County, which is on the eastern side of the state, northeastern side of the state, and the borders Canada.
Washington over by Spokane and all that.
It's going in that direction. Right.
Well, I can't ride my bike there, dang it.
That'll be a long ride.
Yep, I wanted to, this is, I'm speaking to you right now on our alternate conference line.
Okay.
And it's actually the backyard. You remember how we set up the backyard?
I remember the backyard.
Well, it's still the same. This is the backyard.
Still the backyard. Okay.
Yep. And so when people have a problem calling into your show because a lot of internet providers are making these conference calls and calls to podcasts out of network, out of plan calls.
All right.
Now they want you to pay a penny a minute. So you can, would also give out this number for people to call in if they can't. You know, put it in the marquee. If you can't dial in on the regular number, call in this number. Okay?
All right.
And then I will show you.
Which is 971. Okay.
971-379-9537, I think.
Right, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
So, and then also, I will teach you how to open that up right from that dial pad. You know when you use free conference call to dial in to the show, after you do that, then go back to that same dial pad, and there's a button on there that says meeting. And if you press that, that will open up the backyard.
Okay.
And then I would just suggest that you do that every day, make it part of the routine when you open up the show, because it's going to be more and more people that aren't able to call in. So I would just make this a part of the daily. That makes sense? Hello?
Yeah, okay, I mean, I got booted out. I'm back.
Yeah, so I would make it a part. I would open up that backyard every day and just make it part of the daily routine, because it's going to be increasingly more and more people having a problem calling in. So just open up the backyard every day. As soon as you call into the show on this dial pad, go back, click that meeting button, and then continue on as usual. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does.
And then also, you can also, now that will open up another switchboard, so you'll have to monitor that, see if people have called in.
Right.
You know. And then you'll also have to, hey, if anyone is in on the alternate yard in the backyard, if you have something to say, you know, because there's not a hand for them to raise.
Got it.
So you'll have to be vigilant. Does that make sense?
It does.
Okay.
It does. Well,
if you want to go in the backyard and then go in there and look, because you'll be able to see the numbers that are on that are call in, and you can mute and unmute. Mm-hmm.
Right.
You can also play back music from there and stuff like that too, and play back audio.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds good.
So that's what I
wanted to, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to hijack your show this morning, but I wanted to
No, that was people, I give people an alternative, and what we'll be doing, like I said, we're our daily routine now, we feature at least one tiny town, and then tomorrow I'm waiting on a call back from what I put out this morning, where we'll have opportunities for people to participate in a tiny town that we're organizing in Florida this week. So, but I'll call you about that later today. I'm just waiting on a call back. Oh, Jesus. Everybody calls me when I'm on the air. Okay, let's.
Yeah, okay. Call into the show, everyone. Call into the show.
Yeah, let me, let me go back here. All right, what we're going to do is, if I can, let me see. Oh, anyway, Baron, before I go to Steve Harvey, something like that. Yeah, so that's right in your state, Washington State and Ferry County. That's in the northeastern part of the state. Not extreme east, but
I'm gonna go
close to
him.
It, right on the connecting border. Huh?
I'm going to go see him. I'm going to go hop on a train and go over the mountains, and I'm going to go meet this person and interview them.
Well, no, Russell is no longer living now. He discovered the town, like, he started the town over 100 years ago. And he started as a mining town. So I don't know where he's buried, but they do have their own airport. Abbey Airport, which is in Laurier, Washington, and that's in Ferry County in Washington State. So, but we'll be featuring other towns in Washington State. That's just one of them. We'll be featuring other tiny towns. And then somewhere along the line, I'll find out how Seattle started. You know, I might do that this show. I'll find out how Seattle, Washington started, but your people will be amazed at the saying that I put on here often. Everything starts with one. Houston, Texas started with two. Okay. But it's a lot of towns start with just one or two people, and there's nothing there. But I mean, all kinds of rain, to mountain, to desert, to forest, to, I mean, nothing but an idea. And then, you know, they just sometimes start out just as a watering hole. Like Lobo, Texas, which we covered last week. Basically, it was a watering hole, you know. So, all right, on that note, we'll be back right after this with, we're going to go into, since we're in Washington State, how did Seattle, Washington, how did that come into being?
I used to spend the night in hotel parking lots. What was I going to do? I ain't had nowhere to stay, so I lived in the car. I had $35. And I said, come on, God, man, I've been trying to make this dream come true. You done left me out here like this. And I was crying so hard that he just said, I didn't like hear a voice or nothing. But he spoke to me, and however he said, if you get up, I'm going to take you places you ain't never been. Now, I was finna quit, so I said, skip it. I'm going to quit anyway. So I got in my car. I went to a payphone, and I was going to call my dad. You remember back in the day where you could punch in a code and call your answering machine and get your messages? So I called, and I punched in the code, and he said, doop. He said, hey, Steve, this is Chuck Sutton with Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of you. You're very funny. If you could get here Sunday night, we'd love to put you on television. Call me back Let me know if you can make it. So I hung the phone up. I'm crushed because my whole dream of being on TV, and I couldn't get to New York. I got $35. How am I going to get to New York? I can't make it. So I'm standing there at the phone booth and tears just coming down my face. I said, God, so that must be a sign for me to go home. Because this it, I ain't even got the money to go to the Apollo. My whole thing, I wanted to be on TV, I couldn't even make the dream come true. This is the most messed up moment. And so I said, man, let me call this dude back and see if he said this Sunday. Because maybe he said next Sunday and I can hustle up a little bit of money or something. I don't know what I'm going to do, but let me just call him back. So I call him back. Steve, this is Chuck Sutton, Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of yours. You're very, very funny. Look, we have an opening Sunday night at Showtime at the Apollo. If you can make it, we'd love to put you on TV. I said, it's this Sunday. Before I hit the button, I heard, doop, you have another message. Now, it wasn't there before. So I punched my code in. I listened to the second message. It said, Steve Harvey, this is Tom Sobel from the Comedy Caravan. This was a Thursday. He said, I have a gig in Jacksonville, Florida on Friday night that pays $150. If you can get there Friday night, you'll make $150. So I called him back and I said, hey, Tom, did you get a gig away? He said, no, it's still available. He said, can you get there? I said, I'm in Pensacola, Florida. I'm 3.5 hours away. So I drive to Jacksonville, Florida, and that night I made the 150. The club owner said, man, you're funnier than the guy we hired. If you stay tomorrow night, I'm going to give you another $150. So now I got $300 now. So I get on the phone. I call Chuck Sutton. I say, hey, man, is the gig still available at Showtime at the Apollo? He said, yeah, we got one opening left. I said, I'll be there. So I called Eastern Airlines, who used to be open back then. They had a special for $99 going from Jacksonville, Florida to New York round trip. So I parked my car at the airport. I got it. Got on plane, flew. Everything I had was in two bags. Got to the Apollo. I said, hey, man, I'm here. I got there at 11 o'clock in the morning. He said, you can't stay here because you don't come on to the late show tonight. I said, man, I ain't got nowhere to go. I said, if you just let me stay in this building, man, I ain't going to move around nothing. I ain't got nowhere to go. I'm in Harlem. I can't go back out here. I got these two bags. I got victim wrote all over me, man. So he said, all right, if you go upstairs, don't come down. So he put me in a dressing room on the sixth floor. So that's where all the comedians were. So I stayed up there. I got hungry around 3 o'clock, but I couldn't take it no more. So I went back downstairs, a dude named Alton Liston. I said, hey, man, he said, man, I thought I told you, don't come down them damn steps. I said, hey, man, I'm just hungry, man. I said, let me go to that KFC I saw on the corner. Just let me get some chicken. I'll come right back. He said, man, if you ain't back in 20 minutes, you ain't getting in this building. So I went, bought me some chicken, came back. So the comedians started coming in the building. They started coming up on the sixth floor. So I meet this guy named D.L. Hughley. I introduce myself. He introduced himself. I'm sitting there, another guy come in named Dwayne Johnson. Then this other dude walked in named Jamie Foxx. And I introduced myself. We don't know each other. Ain't none of us famous. It's 1991, man. They gave everybody the lineup. I was on the last show of the night. I don't go on to 11 at night. I'd have had this 4 pieces of chicken. I'm starving, man. That chicken done wore off. I'm nervous, man. I'm about to throw up. D.L. Hughley went downstairs. D.L. Hughley got booed off. Dwayne Johnson got booed off. Jamie Foxx went down there and got booed. They booed Jamie, then Jamie started singing. And then they started clapping. And Jamie had their ass. Then he went back to them jokes, and they got his ass. So I'm walking down the steps, and I see Jamie sitting on the steps. I said, hey, man, hang in there. He said, man, that ain't never happened to me before, man. This is crazy. This is Jamie Foxx, man, one of the most talented people in all of comedy. And now, you don't even know how nervous I am, man. I can't even. My breathing is shot because these dudes been booed. So I walk out. I had wrote this joke. Mike Tyson had got in a fight in Harlem with this heavyweight named Mitch Green. Mike Tyson had hit the dude in the eye in the store. Now, he was on the news. His eye was swollen. So the joke I wrote was they was interviewing Mitch Green, and he was telling everybody what happened, but his eye took over the interview. And I wrote this joke that his eye started talking and was just, I tell you what happened. The heavyweight champ's fist is coming towards my face. I just said, Lord, Lord, Lord. And I wrote this whole joke about this dude's eyeball talking. And when the punch came, and all this here, the Apollo, man, they went crazy. They lost their mind. I got a standing ovation, man. I walked off stage, man, just started crying. I couldn't believe it. They paid me. I made $750 for being on TV for one night. I'd never made $750 telling jokes in one night. And so that was my first television appearance. A couple weeks later, Sinbad was the host of the show. He got this job on Different World. And so he quit. And so Mark Curry became the host. And then Mark Curry got hanging with Mr. Cooper, and he quit. And they came to me and said, would you come back to New York and host Amateur Night for us to just try you out? Oh, ain't no problem. And so I went to New York. I hosted Amateur Night, and I was killing. But every time we went to commercial break, I was supposed to let the warm-up act take over like Ruben does. But I knew not to let the warm-up act do that because he would change the attitude of the crowd because the Apollo was a wild place. So I stayed out there. I did the warm-up and the hosting. And I created a bond with that audience. And that's how I got on TV. It was my very first TV show. I hosted Showtime at the Apollo. I ended up being the longest-running host in the history of Showtime. I did that show for 8 years. Nobody ever did it for 8 years. And that was my turn-back moment. See, in your life, everybody has a turn back moment. You have a moment where you can go forward or you can give up. But the thing you have to keep in mind before you give up is that if you give up, the guarantee is it will never happen. That's the guarantee of quitting, that it will never happen, no way under the sun. The only way the possibility remains that it can happen is if you never give up no matter what. Because God is always coming. He's never too late. At your worst moment, look, man, when they told me I had to be in New York, I saw no way I could get there. But that God, though, he make the phone ring. I end up in Florida. I make $300. Then I go to New York. I make $750. Almost got $1,000 out of nowhere. That's what happened to me. That was my moment of never giving up. That's when I first learned that faith was everything, that you have to remain faithful.
All right. And that's from Steve Harvey with some motivation. All right. The tiny town that we featured today was Laurier, Washington, population 1, but they do have people that work there because Laurier has a post office, they have a general store, and they have their own airport, Abbey Airport, in Washington State. They have a border crossing as well. And they have two residential houses. That's for border control. All right. So now, and the town's over 100 years old. Now, since we're in Washington
State, they're on the border.
They're on the border. Yep.
Interesting.
In Ferry County, Washington. All right. We're going to take a little quick. This is the beauty of the United States. Like, so you have 108,000 settlements in the United States classified as towns, cities, villages, what have you. But there's 108,000, give or take. All right, 108,000 of them. That's a lot of towns. All right. And Laurier is one of them, population one. New York City is that big as well. Now, let's go to Seattle, Washington. The person that was instrumental in founding what we now know as Seattle, Washington, is a guy named, people, I'm just going off the internet, Wikipedia. Arthur A. Denny, D-E-N-N-Y, Arthur A. Denny, the future city, we're talking about Seattle, Washington, was born when the schooner, which is a ship, the schooner Exact, E-X-A-C-T, dropped anchor off on Alki Beach in present-day West Seattle. It carried Arthur A. Denny, 1822 to 1899, and a few of the pioneers, 10 adults and 12 children. So Arthur A. Denny, along with 10 adults and 12 children, they were the people, the pioneers, that started what we call today Seattle, Washington. There was no Space Needle. There was no Seattle Seahawks. I don't know if they have a basketball team still, but in any event. Let's see, that he and his father led from the Midwest over the Oregon Trail to Portland. Amtrak wasn't around back then, so they were doing it, they were roughing it. So Arthur A. Denny, all right, 10, 12, 23 people founded what we call today Seattle, Washington. And then some people that probably got this, you know what? There's another town and not too far from from Seattle. Everett, Washington.
Okay. Yeah, Everett to the north, Tacoma to the south, the big military installation, Joint Base, Lewis, McChord. It used to just be separate, Fort Lewis,
okay.
Army Base, and McChord Air Force Base.
Let's look at Everett. All right, Everett, the early history of Everett and settlement, the Port Gardner Peninsula was originally inhabited by a local Coast Salish tribes of Native Americans who arrived in the region 10,000 years before present-day Everett. Approximately 2,000 years before the present day, the Sahomish people, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, lived around the local waterways in the Possession Sound. Okay. All right, wait, let me do it this way. All right, Dennis Brigham, B-R-I-G-H-A-M, one word. Dennis Brigham was the first. Now, we have to quote because there are people there with 10,000 years ago. Okay, but Dennis Brigham was the first European permanent settler in an area that we would now call Everett, Washington. He was a carpenter from Worcester, Massachusetts. He came there in 1861, the same year that Sohomish County was organized. He built a cabin on 160 acres along the Port Gardner Bay, and he lived alone. So there you have it. Here's a guy, Dennis Brigham, maybe he started out in 1860. I don't know. He was completely across the United States and Massachusetts. And somewhere along the line, he read about Washington State, the Washington Territory, whatever it was called back then. And he traveled, once again, there's no Amtrak, no Greyhound bus, no mega bus. He couldn't have caught a flight, and he was a carpenter, so he went out to Washington State, made it to the west coast of Washington State, and he bought 160 acres of land, and today we call that Everett, Washington. So, Robin, how many people live in Washington? I mean, Everett, Washington. You know that figure?
No, let me look it up really quick.
Okay.
$111,000.
As I've said many times before, and I continue to say it again, everything starts with one. Okay.
Yep.
So here's
the
carpenter.
This is the seventh largest city in Washington State and the 276th largest city in the United States.
And it started with a carpenter who I guess he felt maybe kind of crowded in Massachusetts. I don't know. I'm going to do more homework on him. But he traveled across. He didn't have an internet connection, people. Okay, a lot of these small, tiny towns, they start off tiny, and, you know, for whatever reason, they stay tiny or they get so small or whatever. But it started with one carpenter who built his own cabin, lived by himself, and now that town's grown to over 100,000 people. And one of the the seventh largest in the state of Washington, and one of the largest cities in the United States. I mean, in the scope of 108,000.
And I beg to differ about the internet, no internet connection, because we have to remember that we are the currency, and. Some kind of way he figured out how to travel and physically and make that connection.
Right.
With other electric beings that are vibrating. Now we've got modern technology but you still, even though you've got modern technology, but watch this. We couldn't go anywhere. We couldn't travel anywhere now and see 160 acres and buy it. It just wouldn't be that easy for us like it was for him. Even with all this modern technology. So I don't know. I think I might have liked to be back then and go get me 160 acres back then to have in my family now. Now we're talking something.
Well, because, I think the same thing could be done today. Now, you got to remember, let's look at some of the common denominators. Now, when he came out and found that spot, which we now call Everett Washington, it was nothing there but trees and whatever you had.
Water.
In Washington. Okay. Yeah, water. No buildings or nothing like that. So he had the skill set, because he was a carpenter, so he had the skill set. Now, see, here's the thing with modern, with our 2023 and the beyond people. We have been addicted to the comfort and conveniences that have been put into place. The typical person today is not willing to learn how to build their own cabin. Also, he didn't have like an Everett. I haven't been to Everett, but I'm speculating Everett has a bus line. So, having a bus line is a convenience for transportation. You know, there was no Uber and Lyft back, when he was so there are plenty of places in the United States where you can buy 160 acres of land today. All right, but then you're going to have to either acquire some skill sets that he had or partner up with people who had skill sets that you can make your own community like he did. Because I'm sure when he came out, well, I don't know him or nothing like that, but obviously this guy wanted, he came clear across the country because he wanted to buy some affordable land. So he bought 160 acres for, I don't know how much, but he bought it. So as the town grew, I'm sure that, as it was platted off and lots were sold and all that, the pricing of housing went up. Just like, with before I mentioned him with Everett, the guy who he and what, 12 other people, not 12, 22 other people founded Seattle, Washington. 10 adults, well, 11 including, 11 adults including him, and 12 children. So when they, and they came by boat. So essentially, when they dropped anchor, there was no Space Needle. There was no anything that we see that are the modern conveniences and comforts of Seattle, Washington in 2023 did not exist. But they made it into something, and as time went along, I think one of the major industries, not only for Seattle but Everett as well, was timber. It was rich in forests and trees and whatnot. So as more and more people, and that was the economic, one of the primary economic engines to help those two cities grow.
Yeah, the timber, the fish, and the fur. My mother used to say, necessity is the mother of invention.
And I'm sure a lot of businesses popped up and a lot of people moved to King County and Sohomish County. Those towns grew respectively, whereas but a lot of towns choose to stay small. Like, say, out of 108,000 towns in the United States, only 10 of them have a population of a million or more people. And there are over 77,000 towns that are unincorporated, and most of them have a population of 5,000 people or less. But they're, believe it or not, there are more towns that have a population of 1 to 10 people than there are towns that have a million or more people. So, and like I said, they have all these places have, like, even in Seattle, I consider that humble beginnings. 23 people, that's not a whole lot of people. Everett, I like Everett's story better because it was one guy who was a carpenter and he built the house for himself. No wife or anything like that. And I like it there. You know, he probably made a living by somebody. You know, he probably made friends and all that. Hey, can you build me a cabin? Can you sell me a an acre of land? That's how the guy. It went from 1 to 100,000 people. You know, he was by himself, and then you know he just started selling lots, and you know, because an acre is a football field. That's quite a bit of land. So he wasn't utilizing all of it. I mean, he had enough to fish. There was enough timber there to make other houses, and then he probably got big contract work out of Seattle. It's amazing. I mean, one person. And that's really the common denominator that you're going to find with a lot of these places that we're going to be featuring. A village is the easiest thing to start. You just need a patch of land. There's no debt. I mean, we feature towns on here that are smaller. Punky, Kentucky, 1 acre big. So it can be 1 acre big. As a matter of fact, it doesn't even have to be an acre big. Because there's no hard and fast definition that I've run across. And so you find a patch of dirt and
so
one
let's,
person.
So let's
one
look
village.
At that. What does, I guess legally, what defines or what determines whether this is or establishes a city, town?
Okay, that's a very good question, and I'll attempt to answer that right now. Now, everything starts out with as a settlement. Now, and the simplest form of a settlement would be, I guess, called a hamlet, H-A-M-L-E-T, a hamlet, and then something that could, but there's no hard and fast definition on that. What might be a little bit, if you have a few more people, like two or three people, it could be called a village. All right. Now, if you want it to be called a town or a city, if you specifically want those two designations, town or a city, then depending on the county and the state, they have requirements for that in different states and different counties all throughout the United States and around the globe. It's different based on, you know, wherever you are. Now, in some places, you might have to have a certain amount of acres of land. In other places, it's not based on that. If you got a patch of dirt and you have a number of eligible voters, and 50% of those voters, they draw up a petition and they submit it to the state legislator or whatever, and they vote on it. So that's for it if you want it to be called. That's if you want to get it to be called a town, and get a municipal charter. Now, for a designation of city, from what I've researched, it's based on population. So if it gets to a certain population, they have now fourth-class cities, third-class cities, second-class cities, and first-class cities. Like a place like New York City or Seattle, Washington, those are municipalities, and municipalities offer municipal services like police, fire department, public schools, maybe hospital. Those are municipal services. And you typically have an elected mayor, a city council, alderman thing, and those are cities. That's a first-class city. So, but some people, okay, and there's, 77,000 towns out of the 108,000 towns in the United States, these people, which is 14% of the population in the United States, they choose not to live in a city because it's more bureaucratic and it's more expensive to live in those places. Like in Ferry, in Laurier, Washington, population one, they don't have a school system. So they don't need tax revenue to support that. They don't have a library system. So they don't need tax revenue to support that. So, but that's only where 14% of the population lives in the United States.
But,
so,
wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Just because they don't have a library doesn't mean that there's not a need for taxation. There's still roads.
There's still things
that it takes to support the municipality.
True. Well, let's go to Lukenbach, Texas as a good example of that. Lukenbach, Texas, population 3. They have a municipal charter. All right. Now, in residence 3, so when Lukenbach's, the town generates revenue through their website, which is online, Lukenbach, Texas. They generate revenue through weekend entertainment events, and that keeps their streets and their roads clean and the grass cut. They sell merchandise, and if you want to rent the whole town of Lukenbach, Texas out, you can rent it out for a wedding, for any type of events that you want to have. And the other towns like that, so that's how they generate revenue for those three citizens.
So I'm right on. I'm spot on with my ideal for Presidio County. Hey.
Now, speaking of which, now Presidio, the plan that we have in this week, one of the times that we featured was Lobo, Texas, which is about two counties over from, two counties over from Presidio in Texas. Lobo essentially started out, their primary economic engine, they were a water stop. And that town recently sold for like $100,000. And people that they bought it for $20,000, but it started off as a watering hole. Then I think they put a bar there or something like that, but it recently sold for $100,000. So, yeah, it's amazing how a lot of these towns, no matter how big they get or how small they stay or everything in between, it's, you can't get any simpler than that. The guy goes from coast to coast, buys 160 acres, and all he wants is he wants to be left alone and build his own cabin, and then I'm sure people came along, can you build me something? Can you build me something? Can you build me something? And, you know, more important people, I got to get the history on Everett. But we found out how it started. One person, 160 acres, and one cabin. And that's why I call places like that the real United States of America. You know, find you a place where there's nothing, almost nothing, and go from there. So,
I can't wait till I write the chapter in my book about the development at Presidio County. Woo-hoo! I cannot wait. Going to be going
right,
to see it pretty soon.
People, we have 10 acres in Presidio County, Texas, and it's a pretty big county. It's big, it might be bigger than the state of Delaware and Delaware and might be bigger than Delaware, might be bigger than Rhode Island, and maybe Connecticut. I'm not sure. But Presidio County is about 45, you know what? Oh, let's get accurate. Let's get accurate here because we got our computers here. All right. Part of Presidio County borders the country of Mexico. And Presidio County has a town within the county. And the name of the town in Presidio County that we're talking about is Presidio, Texas. So that's a border town in the state of Texas. And about 4,000 people live there. And let's say from our location, to the border, well, let's take it to Presidio, or no, Mexico. Let's see. Okay, wait a minute. I will just do it to Presidio. Okay. It's 57 minutes. It's 59.8 miles to the border. It's a 50-hour drive. Okay. Hour drive might be shorter, but that's from Mountford, Texas. So, if you want to get into Mexico, I also have a Big Bend State Park is within the same county of Presidio, Texas, and our next door neighbor in Brewster County, Texas, literally connected to Presidio, is Big Bend National Park, and there's some other things there, and you can, so, anyway, people that are interested in that, just contact us, and anyway, but we'll be talking that up for us. And we're currently working on stuff in Florida as well. But in any event, all right, now tomorrow, all right, I've gotten updates on this phone situation here, so I'll call some people back this afternoon on that. So we'll have you plugged into the backyard tomorrow, as we call it here, on Blog Talk Radio. Robin, any announcements on your end?
None that I can think of, just deadly. Just want to welcome Smoking Otis to the network. I am streaming. We are considerably growing. So Smoking Otis is an artist that has country music. He also has restaurants in Austin, Texas. There's also children's books that's going to be published, a radio station, all of that. So we just want to welcome Smoking Otis to I Am Streaming. And that's about all. Oh, and the backyard for It's My House, or now Do-It-Yourself Housing TV, will be open every day now. So that number is 971-379-9537. Okay?
All right. We got a call here. Area code 307. Your mic is open. 307.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine, fine. Good to hear you.
Can you hear? Good. Good to be
yep,
on
we
the
can hear
show.
You loud and clear.
I love the Wonderful. My name is Teresa. Most people call me Dr. T. I wanted to share a little bit about, I love the show, and I've signed up to subscribe as well. We are building a tiny village, tiny home village in Georgia that provides housing to homeless youth, youth exiting foster care, individuals with disabilities, other homeless, and elderly. And we are building a village, and so I've appreciated the conversation that you guys have had. I myself come from Wyoming, which of course there's tons of tiny towns in Wyoming, and I grew up on the very corner of Wyoming, Nebraska, and Colorado, so I'm well aware of tiny homes, and we're hoping to make a large impact and teach the youth how to build their own homes, have self-sustaining properties, and just become a community of giving to each other and helping each other thrive in today's society, which is very difficult. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, first thing, I like to have you on at least once a week to promote the village that you're building and or developing rather in Georgia. So at least, matter of fact, if you're available tomorrow at 10:30 Eastern Standard Time, we want to feature what you do. But I like to have you on at least once a week for that. And then I'll have Robin got us straight on the phones because Chris has been trying to get in, Chris Collins. But, yeah, at least once a week because my feelings are it's essentially that's where the ball is going. Some of these, I mean, a lot of people that are living on the grid in some of these larger cities, you probably need to get on the pioneer spirit and get on some of these developing towns. Some of these sounds, a lot of these sounds are meeting specific needs. So if you're available tomorrow or anytime this week, just let me know. But tomorrow morning is open if you're available for that.
I can be there tomorrow. Chris Collins is my partner in doing this. He's developing the property we're looking at. It's 41 acres. And there's already homes on there. There's a place for the school. It'll be a therapeutic learning and vocational transition community where everyone kind of works together, not kind of, everyone works together to give a hand up, not a hand out, to other individuals. So our program is very unique. He's been instrumental in the building side of it and connecting. In fact, he's the one that told me about your radio show, so I'm very grateful for that. But I'd love to come talk about that because our youth are worth it. Somebody's got to do something to bring these youth back to a mindset of being a positive member of society, you know?
Right. I agree. Now you say you're from Wyoming. One of my favorite TV shows is on Netflix called I was just watching it at 3 o'clock this morning. Oh, Longmire. Longmire is about a sheriff out in Wyoming, and I haven't been out to Wyoming yet. I got to get out there because I absolutely love the landscape of the place. So could you share with us what's happening in Wyoming?
Well, I have to say my grandfather was a mayor of a very small community. I think the sign going into the name of the community is Fort Laramie, and it was actually built on a fort back in the day, of the settlers and whatnot. And he was the mayor and the city sign going into the community said 68, population 68 and one old fart. But you could do those kind of things in Wyoming. You know, it's very unique. But there's a lot of property there, a lot of undeveloped land. But the problem with Wyoming is that in the winter times, it can be very brutal, blowing, drifting, blizzards, snow, ice, you know, so mm-hmm. a year-round kind of environment isn't real conducive to working year-round outside. And because the towns are so far apart, there's not the places that have the property are not convenient to be able to employ the children or the youth or the young adults that we're looking to employ with their entrepreneurial skills.
And then I want you to look into they're called opportunity grants. Look for opportunity grants that may be available to you in your area. Kudos to what you're doing. And then also utilize the unions, okay? So you know how they say the alternatives for the youth is either military or the jail. I don't know why we overlook the unions. You've got the painters union, the welders union, the carpenters union. There's an electricians union. And at the union, these youth can go and get a living wage and get on the job training. Journeyman, all of that in these fields. And then one more thing, too. I didn't mean to cut you off. You can partner with the YW agencies like the YWCA, for example, the YMCA, the YWCA. They have, and they will partner with you and provide funding and support like that. Also, maybe some case management and some referral services for your clients as well. Kudos to what you're doing. Kudos.
Oh, thank you so much. You guys are an inspiration to many people, so I appreciate coming on the show and look forward to having more to share with you.
Now, Dr. T, you're on Clubhouse. Give us the times that you have your rooms and the name of the rooms on Clubhouse.
Well, my background is in working with disabilities, so special education. So the main room that I have is on Friday at 7 o'clock Eastern, and it empowers parents with their rights. It talks about the compliance required by schools to provide services and meaningful education to children with disabilities. So there's that room, but I go in and out of rooms throughout the week and just share different areas of knowledge that I have via, you know, building schools, private schools for children, which I had one in downtown Phoenix, Arizona, a therapeutic learning center as well. For at-risk youth and children with disabilities. And so I just kind of go around and do different things. We are getting ready through PIC TV to do a weekly show on there. We're setting up our platform for that as well. So that will be on there as well. So.
Okay, great.
You can watch for that.
All right, well, we're going to cover all that tomorrow. So tomorrow we'll be back with Dr. T. And I'm pet sitting. Go ahead. I'm listening, Dr. T.
That's okay. I just wanted to say, you know, there are so many youth right now that are being I'm going to say kicked out of school behaviors, as we all have recognized some of the trauma that youth have suffered through or have gone through either via COVID or school shutdowns, the lack of social structure and whatnot has left many youth who are struggling in school. And there's an answer for that. There are opportunities if you want your child to stay in public school. However, a lot of parents are choosing to pull their children out. And there are those parents that are homeschooling, there's money available to help you homeschool your child. So if there's parents out there or individuals listening that know of a parent that maybe is either homeschooling or has a child that is struggling, don't be afraid to reach out to New Hope Advocacy. They have lots of advocates that can help you manage and navigate the system of education to help your child so they can succeed. And those that can't, well, we're building a school for them. So
Good. All good. All right. Thank you, Dr. T, and we'll see you back tomorrow morning, Robin, and everybody else who called in listening. Everyone have a good rest of the day.
Hey, wait a minute. L.A.
Okay, wait a minute. We're still here.
Sorry.
Go ahead. We can hear you.
I just wanted to say really quick, if you have a problem dialing into the show or into the backyard, you can text, call me to 973-379-9537. If you text, call me to that phone number, then it will call you into the show. All right.
And give that number again,
so,
Robin.
Help me. Hold on a second.
Hold on.
I forgot.
971-371-9537.
971-379-9537. Text,
and
call
that's
me.
The reason why, Chris, I apologize. I was one, and you told me that, I was one digit off. So, all right, well, we'll have Chris in here tomorrow morning. I gave him the wrong number. I was off by one digit. Okay, on that note, can we go now?
Yeah,
Robin?
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right.